Welcome to Are You at Risk, a podcast from Minnesota Lawyers Mutual Insurance Company. Here are your hosts, Todd Scott with Joy Melvin Griffin and Kiernan Waters.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Are You at Risk, the fastest growing podcast about legal malpractice in all of North America. Thousands of listeners. You guys can call me out on my BS if you want.
But anyway, fingers
crossed. It's a new podcast, and I'm here. I'm Todd Scott. I'm the Vice President of Risk Management at Minnesota Lawyers Mutual. And sitting here with the multi-talented lawyers, my colleagues, the best people you could possibly work with at MLM, Joy Melvin Griffin and Kiernan Waters. We're here to talk about things that can go wrong in law firms in every way, shape, or form. And so this topic today is about cybersecurity, and especially it's going to be focused on a discussion I had recently with the Minnesota Continuing Legal Education Solo Small Firm Practice. And I was there to talk about cybersecurity. You know what, you guys, they gave me this topic and it was called, I don't know if this ever happens to you guys when you're there to speak, but somebody names the program for you. And then you have to, you're the one that's there kind of owning up to the name. And in this case, I guess it wasn't that horrible, but it was sort of, it was called the 7 Mistakes No Lawyer Should Ever Make Regarding Cybersecurity or something, you know, something along those lines.
But with a big skull and crossbones as the PowerPoint.
It's like, I don't know. I don't like the negative names. I was fully expecting to walk into the room and have like 3 people there who just looked like they were very depressed.
Oh, Todd has a line out the door. So, I don't know what you're talking about, Todd. Everybody wants to see you.
Exactly.
I'm surprised it wasn't a fight like on Black Friday to get in.
Well, you're very kind. And, there was, it was up there. I was up there to do a couple different programs, one on AI and one on just the tips and tricks. I talk about technology tips and tricks, but this one was about cybersecurity. But I did think it was so important because it does lead to, we're here obviously to talk about things that could go wrong. And oh my gosh, what bigger thing can go wrong in a law firm than showing up one day and not having your computer turn on?
Oh
and,
no.
So that's how, or worse, it does turn on and you're sitting there staring at that screen. Have you heard about this screen where you've got some ransomware, which means somebody has hacked into your stuff and they have completely taken over your computer, and you see a message that says, maybe I shouldn't get off on this. I could talk about this for a long time.
No, I think that's actually good. What do people see to help them realize that they've just been under a ransomware attack? Is it going to be the demand that just pops up?
That one is particularly nasty because these evil, evil people, they'll send you more so. It would be just nice if it said, we've got your stuff, you owe us money. But it's more insidious than that. There'll be a message on the screen that you have cyber problems and your data has been corrupted and locked up. So you contact us for security and support. And then it will have an 800 number, or you can talk
to
them.
Have your social security number ready.
Yes, yes. And of course, these people are not there to help you. They have got your system hosed. They have locked up your data. They have encrypted everything. And then when you get there and you think, oh, they're there to help, that's when they drop the big bomb on you that, no, your data's locked up. You don't have access to it anymore. And in fact, we've made a copy of it. And for a price, you will get your data back. And so that's what malware is. And so,
get your data back in any of these situations? I mean, if you pay the money in good faith, do you actually get the data back?
Interestingly, yes. If the system, if you weren't, then their whole business model doesn't work. So if they want to truly get money out of you, yeah, they get it back. But here's the trick. your data was never actually taken. Your data is still on your device. They've just encrypted it all. And are the only ones that know the password. And so they make all these threats like, we have your data. Oftentimes they don't, things like that. And so
how much do they want? Like, what's the average or what's the going rate for a small firm or a big firm? And how much are these companies actually making from our friends and colleagues in the business?
It's getting really bad. They will start high. And then, but as soon as you call and beg for mercy, then maybe they'll, and when I say high, I'm talking five figures, even if you're a solo, a small firm practice. The first time I saw one of these was like 2013, I think. So it's been a while that these have been going on. But, you know, 10 years later, 2022, 2023, was called the year of ransomware because they exploded. And then one of the things that's really started to change was they realized lawyers will pay the money that used to be aimed at financial institutions or, you know, other places that they figured people had more money. And now they think we all have sacks of money in our closet. So they realize lawyers will pay it. And so we had a target on our back as attorneys. And so, yeah, you'll get a five-figure demand and then there's a number and then, or sometimes it's a text chat. And so you're talking back and forth and they'll say, you know, that maybe they'll lower it into the high, you know, thousands. But that's their goal, is to get you to give the money. And there's usually a time pressure. You only have 48 hours to do it. And they want it in Bitcoin. And it's freakout time because you can't do a thing. And the really sophisticated ones, if you're connected on an internal office network, it has spread its way to the rest of the network before it
actually
takes
hold. Hence why we like to talk about cloud computing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You hit on them. That's the kryptonite in this situation. So if a solo or small firm, usually it's just a solo where this happens, where if this has happened to them, usually I'll talk to them and go, how good are your backups? And they'll say, yeah, pretty good. I've got this. Okay. All right. Here's what you're going to do. And then what they do is they disconnect the polluted computer, wipe it clean, and then that way it gets the bad stuff off. And then hopefully, if it really is good backups, you can download your backups. You know, it's still going to take, it's a process that takes a while. The firm's going to be down for a while. Just downloading a full backup could really, for one computer, could really mess you up for a while. And but then when you get it all back up and running, at least you got your work product, things like that. And then you just want to make sure your malware and your virus, antivirus and firewalls are all up to date, and to make sure that the bad thing doesn't get back in. So, but more and more firms are finding out, especially if you've got two or more people all connected to a network, we don't know how far the virus has spread in the computer. The backups may not be as good as they were. And so there are people now that will specialize in this. And so, worst case scenario, there's this point in time too. I'm really glad we're talking about this, but there's like this point in time where what they call a pay or no pay decision if you're the firm. And so where you have to sort of make that determination, maybe my backups aren't as reliable as I thought they were. And I've got too many things I am worried about, that they really did hose up a server that had years worth of data on there, things like that. And so, you know, usually the bigger firms will have to really struggle with that pay or no pay decision.
Asking for $1 million,
good,
right?
IT people. Yeah, yeah, for sure. In that case, in the six figures. And so we see it a lot, way more than you'd think. And so that's part of the reason why I was up there teaching these lawyers about this thing is equal opportunity offender. It will go after the big firms and the small firms, and whether you're in a big city or you're way out in the country.
I heard something recently where some of the new trends in this type of thing are, you know, the larger firms actually pose more of a, you know, hurdle to break through because they have resources from their revenues that they can have, you know, better software, better programs to prevent the hacking. Whereas, you know, if you're a little attorney out here in Westminster, Carroll County, Maryland, and, you know, maybe you just have a little neighborhood type of practice, you think you're not the big win for a cyber hacker. And you might be just, you know, flying under the radar and you don't need the protection as much. But I think that's not true. I think it's so much easier for these hackers to go after 10 small firms than one big firm. And not only now do they have maybe $10 million at, you know, $1 million per small firm, but what about all the confidential information that they're able to, you know, social security numbers? I think we've all been involved in, you know, the hacks of like Target and Home Depot, and we have to change our password and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And maybe, you know, we get some free protection moving forward as a result of being involved in that kind of release of information through the Target Corporation or Home Depot or what have you. But are they going after both, or are they really just looking for money, or are there different hackers that are looking for, you know, ways to steal identities in addition?
Yeah, that's a great question, a great point. One thing I will tell, well, I have a story to tell you that this might help make the point.
Oh.
Because a lot of times we think of these people as, you know, some kid in their mom's basement or some insane person also in their mom's basement, but over on the other side of the world or whatever, a really evil person or whatever. But no, these are businesses.
Yes.
And that's one of the points I tried to make. This is why in this 2023, we talked about it a lot, and we continue to do so because of the explosion in this area. Now, here's my story. At the start of, I guess what, I won't call you guys out on your history here, but because I'm trying to remember it myself, but okay, so Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014, but then it was kind of a stalemate. And then they reinvaded it, was it in 2022? February of 2022, I think, maybe 21, sometime after pandemic had started and things like that. And then they reinvaded it, and then the war continues now. Well, there was somebody that worked for this hacker group that was a Russian hacker group owned by Russians, but it was this person was Ukrainian, and so he wasn't really happy with his employers. And so he decided to hack his own hacker group, his employer. And so he took all this data. And by the way, the group is called Conti Group, C-O-N-T-I Group. If you ever want to look it up, it's kind of an interesting story. So this hacker invaded his own employer, and he's like, I'm going to get these Russians. And he took all this massive amount of data, and he started this Twitter account. I think it was still called Twitter at the time. And then it was called Conti Leaks is what it was called. And he started uploading massive amounts of emails.
Wow.
And data and everything. But it was the first time ever that the whole world had this look about getting into the, you know, how these groups work. And we learned a lot about it once we started to see what this person was unloading to the world. Number one, we found out that this company had made easily like $2 billion, $2.5 billion in the two-year period.
Wow.
That this had happened, that it had multiple employees. It was set up like Target Corporation, where you have all these divisions to the company, and their sole mission is to hack. And so you have R&D, and their job is to create new ways to get into your computer. And you had the communications department. They were taking the call when you got hacked, and you had to negotiate, hey, this thing says, you know, you want $40,000 in, you know, in Bitcoin, or I don't get my data back. And so they had people working there that spoke all these languages from all over the world. And then they have, you know, other people that are just running the, even had employee of the month. I'm not kidding.
No.
So, and somebody like
best you, place you to work, won. Russia, 2023.
Yes. So the more money you scammed out of people, or that you got them to pay after the call came in, the bigger your quarterly bonus was. So these are big operations, and that's my point. This isn't some 14-year-old in mom's basement. And so, and like I said, we've all got a target on our back now. And so, and lawyers are getting this. How does it happen? And this is why I ended up talking about these things, which is Well, the number one way is that somebody clicks on something bad, and this malware, this little bit of code gets into your computer, and you got tricked into it. It looked like an email that came from somebody else. It may have looked like PayPal was trying to contact you. About, yeah, you guys see these things.
And then, see them all the time.
Yeah, and that's how they get in. And then once they get in, they kind of live in your hard drive, and then they start to proliferate and try to reach out around the network until.
So does it happen automatically? I mean, is it I click the link and the next morning my computer's frozen, or could I click the link and wait months and then just show up one day and have it?
It's the months
it's
thing.
It's funny Oof. That you yep. say that, because one of the first times that I presented on cybersecurity, I remember there was something from the FBI saying hackers will tend to be in your system for up to 200 days monitoring your every move before they actually attack. Still the case?
Yeah, that's the software is getting very, the malware we'll call it, is getting very, very sophisticated. And so it has ways of, you know, part of what reason why it's sitting there so long, Kiernan, is because it's actually sort of downloading other little things to make itself stronger. You know, it sounds like the Marvel universe where you've got
I'm like waiting for the Netflix movie to come out, because this is really interesting, right?
Yes. And so, but it's trying to, you know, so to really, you know, have the full evil effect that as Joy is referring to, it's, you know, the worst case scenario is that social engineering software that's going to spy on your activities. And then, you know, it's fully made its way around your network. And then as it realizes that, okay, it sends signals back to the system that somebody's about to make a wire transfer. Or they're even communicating an email that involves anything that might be of value to the hacker, social security numbers or bank account numbers, things like that, credit card numbers, a 16-digit number might be a credit card number, you know. And but these wire transfer ones, that's where we've seen those claims. And
a lot of real estate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In real estate. The last minute wire transfers. Yeah. They've been working with John Doe for the entire, you know, preparation leading up to the closing. But then the day of the closing, Brian will then email them and say, no, we need you to switch your wire instructions to this. Mm. And unfortunately, they do it.
Yeah. This is as an aside, but we had one policyholder who, after he pushed the button and transferred, he got scammed this way and transferred a ton of money to somewhere on the other side of the world that he was about to never see it again. He was actually able to recover it using law enforcement in Japan. And he got really lucky, because it was we got to find this guy and have him on our podcast. But in that case, it was because it involved a bank holiday in Japan. It was a longer weekend. Mm. He personally found a way to get a hold of the bank president in Japan through Twitter and all this stuff. And then somebody was there to shut the scam down. But other than that, anything short of that, unless you can get a bank president, you know, once you hit the send button on that transfer, it's gone. And it's almost impossible to get the money back. So fortunately, I think we all have more stories about people that were on the verge of getting scammed in one of these things, or they recognize that this looks like, you know, looks like a scam as a result of a hack, things like that too as well. So maybe I'll have that be the start of my sort of list of things that I tell people to do to make sure this doesn't happen to them. And
I've got another thing to add to your list too, Todd. Oh,
you want it? Okay.
They don't think about the cyber insurance aspect of it. The first thing that a lot of people do will say, I'm going to go through my business owner's policy, or I'm going to go through my malpractice insurance policy, and I'm going to get cyber coverage. That's not what you want to protect you in that. Yeah. Having a standalone cyber policy is what the American Bar Association recommends, is certainly what MLM recommends. And if you want the biggest bang for your buck, you need that. But even in your standalone policies, and what I could do is break it down in a better way. Mm-hmm. When you have a standalone cyber policy and you look at so many of the things that you just mentioned, Todd, the fact that there might be law enforcement that has to get involved, the fact that you might have to contact all of your clientele to mm-hmm. notify them of a potential breach of their personal identifying information. The fact that now you might have to offer credit monitoring for a year just to save your reputation so that they don't say this firm did nothing to help me. All of those things add up. And if you were to get cyber coverage as an endorsement from another policy, that is going to be wiped out before day three of trying to figure out what even happened to you. That doesn't even go into the retrieval of your property and cleaning up the hard drives. So standalone policies are better for that because they offer more coverage to be able to get those things for you.
And they should be designed more specific for your law firm. Exactly. Like, this isn't a one size fits all type of insurance policy. For a standalone cyber policy designed for a law firm, it should really be designed for your law firm, because the difference between a solo practitioner and a big, you know, 500 person firm is vast. And the other thing about that, Joy, and I'm sorry to cut in, you were probably about to say this, but to have a response unit that you're familiar with, right? You don't want to be calling, I mean, God forbid you call me when you've been hacked. I'm not going to be able to help you. I hardly know anything about, you know, the real technology involved and how we'd, you know, start to work with these hackers and their demands. But you should have people who specialize in this who you could call, not a Kiernan, but a so-and-so who you've been working with, because they're your crisis response team. And they're going to be available 24/7 and they're going to jump right in to the situation based on the language of your policy document there, but someone you should be familiar with, because this is going to be, I mean, you're going to be putting in some long hours working with this team to right the ship if things go awry.
Definitely. The one other thing that I wanted to mention is be careful, because I think there are some preconceived notions that even if you get the standalone policy, Todd, they think that if there's a ransomware demand, that policy is now going to pay for the ransomware in order to get it back. So I'm so intrigued by what you said, that they really don't have their things. It's more of an encryption. And working with these companies, I've seen a lot of the companies out there, the cloud computing companies, that will say, hey, listen, if you update regularly, regardless of ransomware, we'll be able to retrieve it for you. So almost working in conjunction with a certified IT vendor also helps, because you're not just protecting your firm, you're protecting your clients. We're fiduciaries at the end of the day over our clients' information. So I think those two kind of go hand in hand as well.
That's an excellent point, Joy. And I wish to be honest, I wish I'd said it that good when I was standing in front of this group in Northern Minnesota.
I'm sure
you did. But the quality of the group that you're working with is important in these situations. And we were talking about insurance, and not to go too far off topic here, but, you know, I've worked with lawyers who've been through all kinds of disasters, including, which I never thought I'd see here in Minneapolis, the civil unrest. And that was an example of where that wasn't covered for a lot of people who had business office policies, but it was covered for at least one of my policyholders who was able to do that. And so when the whole building is almost unusable, the bottom line is these are things that are considerations if you're purchasing a business office policy, but the computer related stuff will only just buy you a new laptop or whatever melted in the fire. And that's it. It's not going to take care of, it's not going to restore your data or none of this. And that's where what Joy was saying was so important, is to the cyber liability. So yes, that's very, very important. You know, there's other things too that I'd like to at least highlight a little bit and get your thoughts on, you guys, which is, you know, so much of the reason the bad things get in is because somebody in the network clicked on something that they shouldn't have. And so a big part of it is just good employee training, or everybody who's got a computer should kind of know what phishing is. Phishing, I don't even know why they call it. Well, I guess that makes sense because there's bait and it's on a hook and they're trying to get us to grab it. And so, but they spell it with a PH. So I don't know why. Somebody who's more techie than me would know. But they get you to, so in the case of the malware, there's the bait is, you know, there's some, like I said, some email that looks like it came from your bank, Wells Fargo. And it says, you know, log in, or we've seen the PayPal ones or anything else. And or the worst ones, I can't remember, did one of you guys mention this, where it's an email that is coming, says that you've been reported for
the bar. Right. Yeah. It's the bar complaints. Yeah.
There's, you know, that's going to, you know, imagine these lawyers scrolling through their phone at, you know, 1 a.m. because they can't sleep. And then they see that come in. You're going to click on that, you know.
And, oh, it's a bad day. That just got so much worse.
Yeah, it gets. And so we want to see who could have complained about me. But, well, number one, it's not the email itself that's going to cause the polluted stuff to get into your computer. It's what's in the email. They're trying to get you to click on a link. And then at that point, you know, depending on the type of malware, it might try to get you to click on successive links, or something will pop up that'll say, hold on, transferring you. Hold on while this is, you know, coming on the screen, whatever it is that you thought you were going to see, or whatever. And what they're really trying to get you to do is hold on so all the polluted crap can get into your computer. Oh my gosh, you guys, I should tell you this. It's common enough that I don't think I'm going to embarrass anybody, but I got a call not too long ago about some lawyer who got one of those that said, we've been in your computer and we've been watching what you do, and we turn on your camera and we have a recording of you, you know, visiting pornographic websites, and we're going to take you and your content, and we're going to, you know, and oh, this poor guy, he called me and he was so concerned. And so I told him, no, this is a hoax. You know, don't worry about it. You know, don't click on what they're trying to get you to click on. You know, don't even respond to it. Ignore it. But it says it's going to, you know, send it to everybody in my address book in 48 hours. And you know, that happened a while back. But then a couple of weeks ago, I got the same darn thing. And so I'm sitting here going, I know. And I'm like, so anyway, I don't know. Maybe no comment. But I'm looking at this going, all right, I'm going to take my own advice. I'm not going to freak out. And so I just ignored it. And, you know, 48 hours came and went. But that's phishing. And they're trying to get me to click on that crap so that they could pollute my computer. And so one of the important things is teach the people in the firm not to click on things, not to, you know. And so there's methods you can test this. We at our company use this where, you know, get reports and all that. I am going to give a recommendation to a website, and it's called, oh gosh, do I have it on my screen here? Let me pull it up.
While you're pulling that up, I think I am the queen of phishing alerts.
Oh.
Yes. You can ask our IT. Dusty has been very proud of me. Okay. I just want you to know that. I don't know why I am the I had to ask our IT. I was like, are y'all testing me? What is it? Why am I getting it? And they were like, no, other people get it too. But I feel like once a week, or maybe once every 2 weeks, I'm submitting something because I'm like, yeah, I don't know this person. And you know how they come out? It's the secure encrypted file email. Hey, I'm sending you something that's a secured file. Please, you know, click here to access the file. And I'm thinking it's something about a renewal. And I'm like, ha ha, nope. Mm-hmm. And I'll just pick up the phone and call them and say, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to do it. But that's how it even comes to a malpractice insurance company.
Wow. By the way, the the website I recommend is called phishingquiz.com, phishing spelled with a PH. And if it's great because you go there and, you know, it scores you. And something, a fake email will pop up on the screen and it says, you've received a fax from, you know, a stranger. And, you know, do you want to click on, is this phishing or not? And you're going, okay, what is this, 1999? Who uses a fax? You know, I'm not going to click on this and all that. But they get progressively harder to the point where they start to look like they came from a colleague of yours. And whether you can tell whether it's fake or not. And the fake is really fake, like in ones we've seen in real life, like, this looks like it came from Wells Fargo, but then
they have like fake websites L's. They set up to back it up, don't they? Where you can, like, it looks like you're on your Wells Fargo site if you didn't look really closely.
The one I saw, they used two number ones instead of two L's in Wells. And you don't notice that stuff when you're trying to look to see if it's legit. I mean, that's how.
Well, now people will because you're telling them. Thank you, Scott.
I'll be sending that link to all my senior family members, seeing if they can. Not to point the finger,
Oh my gosh. I think we all have an elderly relative who may have.
Who's going to fail this quiz 9 times before they get it right.
Bombarded.
Okay, everybody, think about who you're going to send it to and then think of the person who's going to fail it the worst. I'm saying it's my mom. I think my dad is going to do it. Oh, my mom,
for sure. We should have a follow-up in a couple of weeks.
Yes, definitely.
A healthy dose of paranoia is really what, you know, is one of the best things you could use. And then, get people to assume that, hey, just because something looks serious, it doesn't mean it is.
And I feel bad for, like, you know, like your friend, Todd, like people who have fallen victim to these things. It's, you know, I think there's a sense of guilt and shame that, you know, they weren't kind of smart enough to know that they were being scammed here. But I think it's, like you said at the beginning of the session, you know, these are professional scammers who are essentially creating a fake world for you to be bamboozled by. So, I mean, you have to be so, you know, so picky about the ones and the L's and all those other little details. And essentially, they're just waiting for you. Joy, the number of emails you're getting week by week, they're just waiting for you to mess up just once and just click it once on accident and not think about it again. And they've got you. So they can try 100 different emails every single week. They just need you to click that one once when you're not thinking clearly, when you're in a rush, when you are waiting for opposing counsel to send you some file with a bunch of documents and attachments. And then they get you. So it's tough. You have to be vigilant. But at the same time, these people are out to trick the smartest of the smartest.
Yes.
Just a couple of other things I'd be remiss if I didn't mention before we wrap up. When we're talking about common tech mistakes, you know, obviously being vigilant of just not clicking on crap is way up there and making sure you got insurance if a nightmare occurs. But other things too that are really basic, most of these things are really basic. They haven't changed in years. Passwords, you know, keep changing them. You know, people don't, I mean, they'll use the same password over and over again. I'm not so worried about how often you change your passwords. I mean, you should, you know, change them at least every 90 days or so, but just don't use the same password on every single platform. And
don't make it password 123. That shocks me all the time. How many people still use the most obvious, the most commonly used? I mean, it's such a, I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, but it's always like a majority of people still seem to use, you know, 123456789 exclamation point, whatever it is. I mean, these are, you have to have those really complicated ones that you forget yourself because otherwise it's so easy. Oh, Todd, you had told me about a website a while ago where you can check how strong your password is and how long it would take for you to be hacked. Do you remember that?
No. Yes, that is a good one. It's called, I'll look it up real quick while we're talking here, but I think it's called howstrongismypassword.net. But it's that one, see, there was a debate for a long time and some people were saying you had to have like 23 letters and upper, lower and all that, at least 23, or it wasn't strong enough. And that just makes the problem worse. That's the reason why people will take the same password and just use it over and over again. But what really what it is just making strong passwords that you can, you know, and things you can remember. So this thing, how strong is my password, this tool, how secure is my password?
Oh.
And it's at security.org, and it's a password strength checker. Anyway, so, but it was kind of cool because, like I'd put in, when I demo it, if you put in password 1234, of course, it's going to, it'll tell you, you know, the software people will use just to break on through your stuff to hack in. It could do it in half a second, you know, and, or if it's any word or combination of words in the English language dictionary, it'll still just take a second or two to figure that out and go in there. And so that's why it is important to have, you know, upper, lower, and some symbols. But it doesn't have to be something you can't ever remember. And so I was demonstrating, like I took my daughter's name, Mary Scott, capital M, capital S, and then.
Hold on, Todd, let me go to write this down so I'll have it in the future.
You with Wells Fargo thing.
So it took, well, so I changed it a little bit. I'm going to tell you all my passwords if you just listen. So, but it took Mary Scott, and then like, and the software would get through in 9 seconds, you know. But then if you change the, I don't know, the O to a zero and Mary Scott, suddenly it took an hour or two to break through. And then if you did things like you changed the S to a dollar sign and the O to a zero, it then took all day for the software to break through. But then if you put the year on the end of it, so Mary Scott, dollar sign, zero, you know, 2024, that's an incredibly hard password for
So for it doesn't the software have to be that difficult. It doesn't have to be these... Basically, what you're telling me, iPhone is the one that does it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They will say, use this strong password.
Dash, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, how will I ever remember this? Yeah.
Oh, and I got something for you for that. And I use this all the time. I strongly recommend it. You get a tool that will save your passwords. Mm-hmm. And in my case, I use a tool called LastPass. And I think it's the best. I always recommend it to lawyers because not only will it, you know, help suggest passwords, but it'll save everything. The same account works on your phone as well as your computer. It'll save other things you use in a highly secure way, like credit card numbers, things like that. But the reason I recommend it to lawyers is if, let's say, you croak. And nobody can get into your computer to get access to your files and things. It even allows you to sort of set up this, it's a security, a succession planning tool.
Wow.
So that I can name my spouse to get access to all my passwords if I croak. And then it will, if I name her and I put in her email address, and then she has a password that she knows of, then she can later on get in. So let's say I die, or no, worse yet, I don't die, and she decides I still want to get into all of Todd's passwords.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I don't need my husband to see my Tiffany's account.
So, well, okay, so you can, here's how it works. So let's say your husband's trying to get in. What's Joy been up to? You get an email or a notice saying, hey, you know, the person you've selected to be your successor is trying to get in. And you can click the button that says, I'm not dead yet.
Yeah.
And so that kicks him, that keeps him out. But if you are, you know, if like 24 hours or 48 hours go by and you don't click that button, then guess what? Your successor gets in and gets access.
That's good, not only for death, but for an incapacity too. So that's great succession planning.
Yeah.
State planning attorneys everywhere are going to be grateful that you've recommended that.
Yes.
So so I do recommend that. It's $12 a year for the professional version.
Oh, wow.
The high end. There's really no reason people shouldn't be using tools like this. LastPass is the one that's used. There's other ones around too that do that as well. Hey, you guys, we should probably have some materials or something that people wanted more, but I guess I'll just get in the habit of saying this at the end of podcasts. You can always contact us for more details of the PowerPoints that we use when we're talking about these or articles we wrote. And you can reach us at riskmanagement@mlmins.com for my list of seven horrible things that can happen to you if you're not paying attention, but anything else as well. So,
and another reason to stay tuned, because Kiernan and I will reveal the person who flunks that test.
Will it be my mom or your mom?
My dad, I'm quite proud of him. He's 92 years old.
Oh, and
he's
so
pretty
awesome.
Good with the tech for being a guy who didn't have a television set when he was a kid. You know, they just gathered around the radio. So, no, he's pretty good with that stuff. So anyway, so yeah, we'll all test it out and report back as to who's falling for the phishing. Thanks so much for joining me again, you guys. Always love talking to you about
these
things.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks to you guys out in the audience, and catch us next time.
Are You at Risk is hosted by Todd Scott, Joy Melbourne Griffin, and Kiernan Waters. Production support by Carol Greethurst. Music by Audio Beats. Recorded and edited by Beth K. Gibbs of Lyft Podcasting. For more information, visit mlmins.com. That's mlmins.com.